falta ni el dinero ni el amor. Soy un hombre muy sincero. ¿De dónde crece la palma?
Yeah. Yeah, Desperado. Yeah. You know, one of the first movies that like I really saw and like kind of analyzed is like, whoa, I want to learn more about this was El Mariachi.
El Mariachi,
and
the
that's
first
only
one?
Because okay. My high school like TV production teacher showed it to us.
I bought homie's book too. I bought homie's book and read it and just like, oh, okay. All right. No, he has some straight up good tips.
Robert Rodriguez,
very practical advice.
The Mexican Kevin Smith.
Yeah. You know, as far as like producers that I look up to, probably Robert Rodriguez is one of those that it's very Mexican to me. Like, just figure it out with the shit you got.
Exactly. And
he's not Mexican. He's from Texas, no?
He's from Texas.
Yeah.
But he's Mexican-American. But he's Mexican-American,
He's Texan-American. That's very different.
But he's not like, but isn't his like his family from Mexico?
I don't know about his family.
Well, we don't need to worry about Robert Rodriguez because this is Orale Height. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode coming at you, not live, but from Radio Espacio in Espacio 1839. Yay, clapping noises. So please, my guest today, please introduce yourselves.
Kenneth Louie.
And I'm Mariana Louie.
Yeah, welcome to the show, y'all.
Oh my God, it's so good to be here.
Thank you for making time. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we're in here. It's a closed off room. We got a fan going on. We got some background ambience. Cause we're trying to stay cool. Even though, you know, it's really hot outside today.
Melting wouldn't be good for the podcast. So.
No, it's not good for electronics at all. There was one time where it was so hot that the soundboard and the computer weren't like really working, so I just recorded off like some crappy Zoom mic.
I'm having a little trouble here. Can we turn the music a little bit down or not?
No,
just a bit because I'm having a hard time with cacophony, like too much.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I can't make. So we'll try to hold your attention.
No, I just need to make you out like better.
Yeah, like, no, for sure. Because I know, y'all aren't wearing headphones, but yeah. So first of all, welcome to any new listeners that might have found this show because they heard me mentioned in the LA Times by a reporter Julia Barajas, who wrote a great article on Bull Heights being the focus and the setting for two prevalent Latinx shows that most of y'all have heard me talk some things about in the past. Vida and Gentified. Have y'all seen those shows?
No, I actually don't watch that much TV.
Were you the Gentified?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, that one's easier because it's on Netflix and Vida was on Stars.
Oh.
So you have to pay for that premium content. What did y'all think about it when you heard about them?
I always wondered why there wasn't a sitcom about Mexican Americans, just like young, hot, 20-something Mexican Americans, like Friends.
Call it Amigos.
Right, Amigos. So when I saw the ads, because I've seen the ads all over the place, I was like, oh, okay, I guess finally someone.
Wait, wasn't that like a YouTube show forever, and then it became like
It never made it to YouTube. They started out as a quote-unquote web series that never made it to the web.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. They screened it once. I saw it at the Ace Theater for like a special screening.
Okay.
But it never made it online.
How different is it?
Dramatically.
Wow.
But a lot of like...
Even in spirit? Like they
a lot of cliche ideas are still the same.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know, when you got Netflix money, you're able to like crank it up to 11.
Right on.
As opposed to like an indie budget of like, I'm going to do a web series.
Right.
Yeah. And
you got to indulge yourself.
You got that America Ferrera money too, so...
She's another Chicana from the Valley.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No stranger to Bull Heights either. But yeah,
would love
some
America Ferrera money.
Wouldn't we all? I would like some America Ferrera money for a lot of things, and I don't think I would do anything productive with them. But no, it works out. A little serendipitous that, you know, that article came out like 2 weeks ago. My guests today are y'all, two independent filmmakers, producers, writers, directors, Renaissance men and women, DIY for life.
Yes.
Out here doing it all.
No choice, man.
we're here today to basically talk about and promote your latest project,
yes,
which is your feature film debut, Artist in Agony.
Correct.
So talk to folks a little bit about it. What is it?
What like, is
sell
it?
Us on it. Yeah.
Wow. Sell of pressure. Well, okay. I mean, it's a comedy. It's a mockumentary, right? And it's done like in the spirit of like all my comedic heroes, like, you know, Mel Brooks and Monty Python and that kind of absurd humor because we didn't have any money. So it started as an experiment. Like I just kind of had this idea because I know a lot of really talented actors. And so I just got this idea to do a very experimental show work. Cause I always want to do like a Spinal Tap kind of thing.
Where, mockumentary.
Yeah.
Style.
Yeah. Yeah. Where like I want to be surprised, like as the director, like, oh, like, cause I live for those little happy accidents, you know, that can only happen if you have good, talented people just kind of riffing off each other. So jazz, kind of like a cinematic jazz thing.
Great
so,
way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, what? So it's just, I mean, talk about the plot and stuff or just like,
well, I mean, I don't want to ruin it for people.
Right.
Cause the whole point is for us to talk about, to get them to want to watch it.
Right on.
I mean, well, you can talk some of the behind the scenes, what production, well, how long, I'm amazed at this. How long did it take to happen?
Oh gosh. 8 years?
Yeah, on and off.
On and
don't
off.
Don't think it's like intense, you know, because we have day jobs and we work and stuff. So it wasn't
yeah,
like,
so a very big thing to know that, yeah, this isn't y'all's full-time career. This
right.
is what you do for fun on the weekends or mm-hmm, when you want
to.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah. it was kind of a challenge for me, too, to kind of like, here's what actually happened. First, I didn't know what it was going to be because first I was open for it to be just like a short or maybe a web series was mm-hmm. the idea. And then I just had the experiment started with me going, hey, what if I interviewed an actor friend about acting?
Okay.
They think they're talking about acting, but when I edit it later, it's actually they're talking about being a hitman. And that was like the original kind of just experiment. And it was I thought it was funny. It got good to me. And then I tried. Then I let the actor in on it, like in mid interview. And I said, "Now, actually, we're actually talking. You're actually playing a hitman." And they laughed. And they, oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
And then I encouraged them. I basically encouraged the actors to indulge themselves, which is always
nice.
Like a,
you give them some creative freedom,
a fun thing to do. And then once I kind of interviewed a handful of these actors and got kind of like these little interviews, I cut it together. And I said, and I asked them, "Hey, can you guys come meet? Because I wanna." You know, I basically was seducing them. And I was like, look, here's like these little bits of the interviews that I randomly did of you. Remember a few days ago? And they're like, yeah, yeah. And then I showed it to them and they laughed. They thought it was funny, right? Like,
right.
you know, just how blasé and casual these psychopaths were about being hitmen. When yeah. And then I just proposed this. Like, hey, guys, I don't know what it's going to be, but would you commit to being part of this project? And like when I come up with scenes and scenarios, you guys
flesh
can riff and
more.
Flesh it out.
Yeah.
And I can give you guys arcs. And it's funny. I said, you just give me 5 more scenes like this or something like that. And it turned out to be way more.
Oh man.
But yeah. But they said yeah. And then you know, schedules conflict. So that was the funny thing about it, was making this thing with the train going while I'm kind of putting the tracks in front of it. And I don't even know where we're going kind of too.
You're laying the tracks as you're going along. Yeah, yeah.
So it was, you know, and it was fascinating too, because like if people fell off like the project, they died. They mysteriously got killed or
convenient.
Were off screen.
Convenient.
Or, so it was a fascinating process. And like anyone can like write a script and then shoot it. No, we're doing this weird kind of experimental as we go, you know, try to create an arc and try
very
to create.
Ambitious.
Yeah,
very ambitious.
In the end, I thought to myself, like, I'm crazy. But it turned, you know, I'm just bored. I just want to do something interesting, something new.
Flex
I haven't
the muscles.
Seen before.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because as I got the privilege to see it with y'all, we saw it like a week ago. And you know, reflecting and kind of like gestating on it, I was like, y'all came up with this almost 9 years ago, kind of a few years ahead of like what we're in now, which I think is like this really deep and ongoing, and it's kind of getting ridiculous, fleshing out of like this like hitman genre of films,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think like John Wick just like put over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like everything that's going on. So and then like years before, like that's one of my like niche movies is like hitman style movies, right? So
yeah.
Like Smoking Aces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What else you got?
Like Tarantino, obviously. You're talking about like the hitman genre?
Oh yeah, that's right. Reservoir Dogs, yeah.
As a genre? I mean, you got, you know, Man Bites Dog. You got Reservoir Dogs. A lot of dog movies.
what else? Oh, The Professional. One of my all-time favorites. It's so problematic.
Yeah, I mean, The Hitman. Because you know what it is, dude? Like, I wanted to tap into that kind of, like, well, a couple things. I wanted to
tap even now, like the new Ryan Reynolds, Sam Jackson one, The Hitman's Bodyguard.
I want, because we all fantasize of being able to, like, take someone out if they're just being mean
to us. I don't know about that.
Or no, well,
that's fantasy. That's what Call of Duty is for.
Well, again, in the movies. Yeah, I'm not saying in real life. I'm just saying, but in the movies, I think cathartically, you can relate to this idea that when, you know, someone's being unjust to you, unfair to you, they kill your dog,
that new
whatever.
Movie with, what's his face, Bob Odenberg.
Yeah, Mr. Nobody. For sure.
Oh, and then
sure.
like Bruce Willis remade the Death Wish mm-hmm, movies. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. a lot of white angry men going around taking the law into their hands.
So I wanted to tap into that. But the other side of it was I wanted to also show how stupid it was, how absurd it is, and how not cool it was. Like as much as they try to make it cool in our movie, it's not cool. It's not fun. They bumble, they fumble, they end up getting hurt. They end up getting killed. Like, it's just, to me,
the harder they try to make it cool, the weirder and more awkward and cringy it gets. It just makes it funnier.
Yeah, that was the comedy. The comedy was is that you know how, like, in a movie, right, John Wick looks cool. Like, he takes out five guys or whatever.
He falls off the side of a building.
Right. But for, in our movie, it was like, for instance, like, one of our hitmen that we follow, Red Rick, like, he looks like the prototypical hitman. He looks cool as a hitman and everything. But man, he bumbles, he fumbles. He's not that good, kind of, right? Then that was something I wanted to play with. That how good actually are they? And it turns out they suck, you know. And
it's just turns out it's just another job.
Well, yeah. I kind of wanted it to kind of be a metaphor for just getting into any art. Or like being an actor, because there's posers, and then there's haters that hate on posers, and who's real and who's not, and I did as the writer think, okay, you know, Frosty, one of the hitmen we follow, is you know, he's actually good, you know, but he has different problems, he has personal problems and that kind of thing, so
really fleshing out like the back stories, really just making it more like giving you that the real like. This you like the real world, right? Like you think what it is, but this is what it really is.
Well, again, like I think part of the comedy was that they got problems, like because see how like Spinal Tap, right? They follow rock stars, but then we get into like their personal life and their girlfriends and the drama of the like
cucumbers.
Oh, the girlfriend is getting between us and like a Yoko Ono kind of thing and that whole deal. So I kind of wanted to do that with the hitman genre too. I wanted to explore. I really wanted to kind of do something special and be like explore this. Okay, we're doing hitmen. Only instead of like Spinal Tap, we're following hitmen instead of rock stars. So, where I'm really gonna go up their ass with a camera and be like, okay, document their love problems and their problems with their wives and what would it be? And I just thought, oh, the husband doesn't like this, or the husband kind of takes it but doesn't like it.
You know,
and that comes out later. And mm-hmm. so, to me, the personal problems of a hitman was a funny thing to explore.
It was genuinely hilarious with y'all having wrapped up the project and now it's actually screening in festivals. Like, what was that feeling of like, we're done, like, yes, Tubo, that's it?
It was tough. After 8 years, and Mariana will attest, because it's hard to let go. Because when you're working on something for this long, here's the thing, dude. Like, there's no money. So in the triangle, right, they say the triangle of quality. You got time, money, and just being good quality, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted good quality. We had time.
Yeah.
Right, but we didn't have money, because they say you can only have two of the triangle, right?
Mm. Yeah.
If you want it like fast, cheap, and good, right. Yeah, fast, cheap, and good. It couldn't be fast, because it was good and it was cheap, because my actors were top notch. I had really good actors, because I set the bar high. I said, okay, look, you're this character, and I can move the story around a little bit here and there, and I did. Sometimes I would make the story against them for comedy's sake. Like, I'd pit one act, like, okay, I'll tell the hitman, okay, in this scene, you want him to beg for his life because you're just depressed. So that's the kind of thing you want out of this guy. And now I tell the victim, hey, no matter what, don't beg for your life. You want to get killed. It's funny to you. You like it or whatever.
Yeah,
right? And I set the actors against each other and just see what happens. Like I wound up two cars and watch them crash into each other. And because the actors were so talented, they kept coming up with funny gags and funny jokes. And then as the editor, I just kind of weeded out. But
yeah, I think it was really fun to see where they would go, because we were always come up with, okay, here's the situation. You have to get to this end point. Yeah. You can meander away from it as much as you want, as long as you get to the end point, because at the end of the scene, this does have to happen. And just kind of seeing their approach, and we really worked hard to make sure they felt comfortable experimenting and improvising.
Yeah, really, and let them indulge themselves, because good acting is when you let the actor really just believe in the situation and let them do anything they want.
And a common refrain was like, don't worry, if it sucks, we won't put it in the movie.
Yeah. We'll just, if it sucks, we cut it out. And then they felt safe. And so they tried all, there's all kinds of weird messed up stuff that we didn't use.
That's a lot of B-roll.
But to answer your question, it feels good, but it's like, it took a long time to, cause I, you know, it's your first feature film. You're vain. You want it to be cool. You want it to be good. So I really put it through its paces and made sure all the, you know, all the things I wanted out of it. The you know, metaphors.
Yeah, check all the boxes.
Symbolism. Yeah, all the like, you know, three act structure and all the arcs made sense to me, or at least in a way that I wanted. And then,
I mean, I can only imagine after putting it down and then couple of months or maybe a year go by and then you get back to it, or like, where did I leave off, where's my bookmark?
So it feels so to answer your question though, it feels good. It's a little nervous because it's like your first kid and you hope your kid's not ugly. And so when we got festivals saying, hey, we like, you know, hey, it's in the show, in the program, we were very elated because, oh yay, our kid isn't ugly.
That's
yay.
Literally what I said, because we actually finished it and started submitting to festivals in the middle of the lockdown in 2020. And so festivals take months to get back to you. And so you know, we just kind of have to let it go. Yeah. And you can't edit it after you submit
it. Yeah, it's done. And then as an artist, you know, as artists, you're always a little insecure. And you always try to make it better. Check it, shore up the weaknesses. Make it better. Make it tighter. Yeah. Is this joke playing? Can I add any seasoning and make it better somehow? Is there any kind of anything?
There's always that. And, but looking back and like, I could have done this better.
So it felt nice to be validated. Like, or just, I'm not the only one that thinks this is funny. Because there's some of that kind of aspect. Like, hey, I think this is funny. This is my dark humor. It's very dark.
Yeah.
You know, it's very irreverent, you know. And
very
so,
specific.
Yeah. Like, I was, you know, it's a bit subversive. It's a bit, honestly, I kind of was going for like a... it's a little bit of a nightmare for a gun, like, because it's kind of anti-gun. I know it seems crazy with all the gunplay that goes on, but for me, it was kind of like, look how crazy it is. So I was kind of, you know, trying to fit in all the kind of more higher points of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like the more societal, because I'm trying to say stuff about fame. I'm trying to say stuff about violence. I'm trying
cult to say of personality.
Stuff about, cult of personality. You know, just like how. Yeah, exactly.
Like, we really treated it as just another silly fandom in that universe. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, we're kind of...
kind of is.
Yeah, talking about fandom, talking about...
Yeah, there was a scene where y'all framing in front of the anime expo.
Yeah, no, and then, like, nerds fighting over who would kill who.
Yeah, that's a very common thing to be fighting over, like...
Green Lantern would take Superman. Like, that kind of, you know...
Well, so here's a question for you, Mariana. Kenneth is the director, writer, basically, like, the horns of like this charge. For you as a producer and graphic designer and like overall filling in other roles of support, like what were some of like the challenges you faced in like producing this?
For me, well, obviously it's funny, like, because we're married, one of the biggest challenges for me was just having him stop working on it when I'm trying to like watch cartoons. Like, can we talk about this later? But that's just like personal life separately. No, it was actually, I enjoy puzzles. I like figuring things out. So it's a great puzzle when he's like, I want to do like set off a bomb, for example. And I'm like, obviously in the movie, not in real life, you guys. It's interesting to figure out how we can make that work with the assets we have, because I composite pretty much all of the VFX shots. Kenny works in VFX professionally, so he knows the idea of how it's supposed to go.
Yeah,
but I'm
so
the actual artist that like puts it together and makes sure it looks realistic.
Yeah, because it's a two-parter. You film it, you're trying to get the angles you want, so that way post, you fix it, and get what you want.
Well, yeah, if there's a gag, I want, like, what's funny is, like, I know what has to happen, but rubber to the road kind of making it happen, Mariana is actually better at that, because she knows how to do, you know, work.
It's a lot of planning ahead.
Yeah. And Kenny is very, I mean, he should be. He's very lofty and, like, very aspirational, but, like, no, I want to make this crazy thing happen. And I'm the one that kind of has to, like, rein him back a little bit, like, okay, we gotta pull it back a little bit to what we can actually do.
This is what we can accomplish,
And he actually wins a lot of the time, because, like but here's the thing, because it ends up putting projects through the paces, because I'll say, well, what about this? What about that? What about this problem and that problem? Did you consider that problem? And he'll, like, have answers to all the different, and that's how we workshop it, and we'll go, okay, well, we're out of excuses, so clearly this has to happen.
Yeah, because as a director, like, your main job is to kind of, you know, come up with it, yeah, but also have an idea of how you could do it, because you can control the frame. So if you control the frame, you may not necessarily need to blow up everything. Yeah. You just need to see, just whatever's happening in front of camera is what counts.
That's experience right there, talking.
Well, that's it's experience, and just honestly, yeah, it's technique. It's technique.
Yeah.
It's technique.
So, with y'all, you know, being married, but also working hand in hand in these projects together, how is that balance, like, with y'all? Because it's very stressful to be in a working, like, environment, right? You're working on an intense project, you know. Mm-hmm. But then you're also, you know, you don't get to go to different homes at the end of the day of production. you get to see each other at home. Like, I'm still mad at you about that, like, thing we did on set.
I don't think about that. We actually don't argue that much.
Everything is in service of the piece. I think we both
the greater good.
Yeah, we're a team, and this is, like, our kid, so to speak, right? So it's like we everything that, even if we're fighting, it's in service of the art. So
it's productive fighting.
Yeah, kind of, and so sometimes she wins, or sometimes I win, or she.
But overall, the project wins.
Exactly, because what we're doing is, like, we only have room, for instance, we only have room for one joke. So, like, here are my jokes, and Mariana come up with her jokes. Like, what? I like I like your joke better. Yeah, let's do that. Or sometimes we'll fight, and she'll be like, well, I think my joke's better. It's like, okay, fine. I'll put that joke in. But if no one laughs, I'm going to elbow you every time nobody laughs. We're in a theater.
People laugh every time.
But then when they laugh, she'll look at me and, like, And I'm like, all right, yeah. I'm like, you know, I liked it. I'm just saying.
It's funny. All right, well, we can come back and to circle back to this conversation, but I also wanted to talk to y'all so folks can get to know y'all a little bit better, you know, where you grew up, what would that experience, but so we can start there. Both of y'all, where did each of y'all respectively grow up?
I am from the Valley, grew up, I'm a Valley girl. You can probably hear it in my voice. Sometimes I try to tone it down after.
It's code switching. But where in the Valley, though?
I grew up in, like, Van Nuys, border of Valley Village? Valley Glen? I forget. We always said Van Nuys. Because when we moved to Van Nuys, then they changed the borders. And I was like, whatever, we're still Van Nuys. Mm. And then after that, in North Hollywood. So it's really interesting. Now, North Hollywood is this bougie, like, ooh, NoHo Arts District. When I was growing up there, because I went to North Hollywood High School in the Highly Gifted Magnet, the other kids that got bussed in for the Highly Gifted Magnet were,
AKA,
like, scared.
Ice Cube.
Right. They were, like, scared to leave the campus, like, legitimately, because they're like, oh, no, it's so ghetto out here. And literally, like, 5 years after I graduate, it's, like, super gentrified.
There's the Lemleys, all these other things are going on.
That used to be an empty lot where, like, people would find, like, needles and shit.
That sounds like the Valley, all right.
Oldest of four siblings. I've always liked organizing shit. Like, I would organize parties, I'd organize games of tag. I invented my own, like, capture the flag for all the kids in the apartment building that we would play. So, like, I like figuring out problems and, like, I want to do this. How do we do it? So when I met Kenny and he turned out to be a filmmaker, I was, like, excited because I like figuring out how to make things work and I like getting people together. It's fun for me.
Hell yeah. What about you, Kenny?
I grew up in, I guess, the SGV, as they say now. So it's a different valley. The other valley, I guess you could say.
It is one of the other valleys.
Right. But, Monterey Park specifically. So, yeah. And just grew up around Monterey Park. And, Alhambra, kicked around Alhambra and Monterey Park. And just that was an interesting way to grow up because, you know, my folks are from Hong Kong.
Hey.
So at home, it's like that Hong Kong kind of, you know, Chinese
very experience. Different than like what,
but then when
yeah.
I go to school, right, it's mostly back then in the 80s, it was like half Latino and half like, you know, Asian, right? So then my friends were like, you know, Caesar and Alvaro, you know, Cesar Lopez and Alvaro Tovar. And like, okay. And so, and we would hang out and watch movies. And that was kind of like, and comic books. And so that was like a big part
yeah,
of my...
Yeah, the nerdiness, you know? Dorkiness.
Yeah, yeah. And then like...
I saw that picture of you in like high top sneakers wearing
yeah!
the Metallica shirt.
Yeah, so that was me. Like that was, so that was... I've always kind of like...
Had a lot more hair back then.
Right. So, you know, it was kind of like... it was great because, you know, you got these two cultures, these two very rich cultures that you got to enjoy because it was like, you know, you go home and then... You know, your mom's making rice and fish and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, but then you go to your friend's house and it's like, oh, have Kenny stay. I'm making arroz con pollo. It's like, oh, yay. You know, so,
yeah, nice.
So that was basically, yeah. And that was kind of me growing up. Me growing up was just watching movies, comic books, hanging out with my homies, you know, going to parties, going to, you know, listen to Metallica. And then like in high school I was in the marching band, so I was hanging around with the musicians. The music was really a big thing, like a big cultural, like that like you were like you couldn't hang out with them if they listened to Depeche Mode, that kind of thing.
Oh,
like,
no, yeah, like, it was a lot more.
It was clicky
click-ish.
Because of music. It wasn't clicky yeah. because of, oh, you use a jock. It wasn't like Breakfast Club. When I was growing up in my high school, it was like, and it's not even that hardcore, but like I said, I gravitated towards my friends who listened to Metallica, because we're all angry, angsty,
young teenage men. Yeah,
yeah,
so. Yeah. What was it? So with you being at the magnet school, Mariana, how was that? Because I know that that's very different. Like y'all are like basically separated from like a lot of folks.
Smarty pants, nerd.
It was interesting, and it was definitely cultural whiplash. Because I was in. I was in like the special programs in like elementary school where they put the kid that knows how to read first and like, oh, this girl's good at math. So I was like taking algebra.
Oh, it's not the
school.
Other sport, like special program where you're like ESL.
Right. No, it was like the advanced program. So I was frequently the only Latina in the class. It'd be like half white kids, half Asian kids. And then like me. And then, so that was all of middle school. My mom had been trying to get me into a highly gifted magnet for years, but we didn't have enough points. The point system's fucking weird. Anyway, so finally in high school, got into a magnet program. Didn't know anybody. All these kids had already been growing up together since elementary school in a
magnet
program.
Yeah, they kind of like stay clustered.
And it was and it was so weird to go from classes where the teachers are like, you know, you can work really hard and be anything you want to be if you guys just study hard and go to college. And then in the magnet program, they're like, you guys are the best of the best. You guys are going to cure cancer. You're going to build rockets. You're going to, like, it was a constant refrain of, like almost like drill sergeants of, like, you need to take
a lot of pressure, insane
amount of AP classes. You need to take, like, if you're not maximizing your potential, then you're wasting it. And it was really, it was a lot of pressure for a lot of kids. And for me, I was like, look, I'm just going to take the classes I'm going to take, and that's it, you guys.
Yeah.
And they were like, it was rough because, like, the first year was rough because the school administrators would see me wandering the halls, and they treat me like a brown kid until they were like, who's your teacher? Where are you supposed to be? Oh, I'm in Dr. Barnett's class. Or like, you're not in Dr. Barnett's class. I'm like, yes, I am. They're like, Dr. Barnett is a magnet teacher. I'm like, yeah, that's my teacher.
Wow.
And like, someone actually walked me to the class. It was like, this girl, she said she's in your class. And Dr. Barnett's like, oh, yeah, Mariana, come on in. And after that, then all of a sudden, I got a pass. Like, it was fine. It was fine to be out. And I'm like, and it was whiplash for me because I'm like, I'm the same person. It's just this
the
administration.
Perception.
The system sees you different now, yeah.
Because they knew I was in the magnet program. And I was like, that's fucked up.
It is.
And it was just like that all through high school. I was so glad to be done.
What about you, Kenny?
What's that?
Your high school experience.
My high school, I hated it.
Aside from like hanging out with the Metallica kids.
I could have skipped the whole thing. Because it's funny, dude. Like when I knew I wanted to like make films when I was like 12.
Wow.
I saw Terminator and I fell in love.
The first one.
Yeah, because you know what happened was I was like, wait, that dude wrote it and directed it and designed the robots?
Was it James Cameron?
It was James
Cameron,
yeah. He's like my first hero of many.
Has he let you down in these last couple of years?
Oh, do we really have to talk about that? He's still my
Transformers.
Hero. Transformers. He's still my hero. He's still my hero.
That's dope. Dude, that's dope. At 12 years old, yeah, like, yeah. No, that movie was, had such an impression on you.
I was a neglected child. I had, you know, so what I did was I drew a lot and I wrote. I was just creative because I was, you know, we were broke and no toys and I just kind of, went to imagination land, you know? Okay. And so when I saw Terminator, fell in love with that movie because...
And this is you seeing it in the theater?
No, on tape. Oh, my dad had a bootleg cable. It was, back then it was called On TV. I don't know if you're on TV. Back then it was On versus Select TV.
I can't confirm or deny these illegal activities.
So so my dad got like this... He had a, like a black box and he recorded it. And you know how like you record off, but you don't know you want to record it until it's going on.
Yeah.
So I missed the first 10 minutes. I didn't even know they came out of time.
Oh, you missed the naked scenes. Yeah.
I just saw the hero Kyle Reese just sawing off his shotgun. And that's where it started for me. But so I had to come up with the beginning myself. Like what happened in the beginning of the movie? I didn't see the whole thing.
Oh, you missed
until
the context. Yeah.
I was like, what? Like 15? Like way later.
All
anyway,
right.
So, that said, to answer your question, I've always wanted to make films. So when I'm in like high school, the whole thing was like, I don't want to say a joke, but just I felt like none of this was pertinent to what I wanted to do in life. So I was just like, unless it was like an English class, then I got to be creative and write short
stories. Yeah, that's real though. That's real.
And that, like, okay, that I dug and was into that.
It wasn't like that and music. I felt the same way. Yeah.
So when they're getting into science, I'm just kind of bored. But I'm going. I mean, I wasn't. You know, like once I went to college, I was starting to get A's, and then I realized, oh, it's not that I'm just bad at school. Because once I went to college, all the classes were about something I cared about, like sound and.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Art Center College of Design, which is like a kind of like a highfalutin art conservatory.
All right, let's circle a bit. So you. You're in high school.
Yes, sir.
Not enjoying it.
Nope.
Not your cup of tea. Well, but you're doing the bare minimum, as they say, to not get fired.
Right. Well, in band, in marching band, like, you know, I'm in, you know, orchestra and like I'm like getting A's.
Where you
that.
Enjoy it, you're like, you're going all out. Yeah.
It's so funny because like I remember they said, you know, jazz is honors, you know? I was like, wait, it is? Like, I'm just having fun.
I'm just over here jazzing.
You know, right. And but they're like, no, jazz is considered honors. So it's like, oh, because they asked me, are you in any honors classes? Like, no. You know, I'm just, you know,
you're just enjoying it. Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, no, jazz is honors. Like, oh, hey. Oh, okay.
So in between your time in high school, you knowing that film is going to be your path, your career. Where in high school were you like, all right, I'm going to go to art school and like go to a film school? Or
that's a good question. So I graduate high school, right? And then I literally ask like people who are professionals and like, you know, hi, I'm
excuse me, sir.
Excuse me, sir.
I have a question.
What's a good college to go to? Right? And they'll say, well, son, you know, and they're really kind. And USC. Everyone said USC. So in my mind, USC was like my destiny, right? And my grades were shit. So I couldn't get into USC with shit grades. And then with shit grades, you can't get scholarship. And my folks weren't going to pony up any dough, you know, for USC. It wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen. So I was depressed. I couldn't sleep at night. I was, because, you know, you mind, I'm a very driven, passionate, young fool.
Still are.
Still.
Just not the young part.
I don't know about young. But, yeah. But, you know, I'm like, I was like, in my mind, I really held myself up to a standard back then, like crazily, like ridiculously, when you're young. Because when you're young, you're like, okay, you like all or nothing because you have the energy. Not like now I just give up, but yeah. So then finally I just said to myself, you know what, Kenny, like, I was kicking around. I was going to JC junior college. For those that don't remember what JC is, but, and then I was kind of like saying to myself, like, okay, I got to learn somewhere. And I remember, seeing a brochure from Art Center and was very impressed by it. Like how stylish.
Look at
like,
this font and this graphic design.
I want to learn how to be stylish and arty and that kind of stuff. So I figured, okay, look.
Is that a private school?
It is.
Yeah.
I didn't. Here's the thing. I didn't even realize how prestigious it was until I got there and people were telling me, like, oh, did you know that you're like, it's like getting in is like 1 in 1,000? And I'm like, word? Oh, okay. I just thought, you know. So I once I got accepted, then I got accepted because, again, my grades weren't that crazy impressive, but I had a little short film that I did just with some kids and with, you know, my video camera, and I guess that made an impression
What was this film?
It's called, oh my god, it's on video VHS, you know, with those big,
yeah, yeah, you like, got this brick on your side,
yeah, 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 like you look like a news, like you're about to do some news, right?
Like, you look like you're gonna shoot a rocket,
yeah, yeah, like a bazooka, yeah. It was called Yo Yo Kid. It was this cute little short just about this little kid loses his yo-yo and just all the stuff that happens for him trying to get it back. It gets thrown into a garbage truck. It
POV goes down of the street. Yo-yo.
It goes and it's all chasing down a yo-yo and then there's bullies in it and he gets the girl in the end and it's a very dude.
He found the VHS and I was like, I want to see the film that got you into Art Center.
Wow, yeah.
And it's impressive. I'm like, a little kid did this? Like, there's
stunts.
Yeah,
I was 18. Oh, a little kid.
Well, 18's yeah. little. And then, like, he has one of his friends hanging off the hood of a truck as it's moving. Like, there's stunts. There's action.
Okay, it's not that
fights.
Crazy, but
it's
illusion, like, though. It's movies.
I'm sure
it's
it
not,
was.
I didn't really
for liability
off
purposes.
I know you didn't. But, like, it's a good movie. It's it, like, just the story's good. There's an arc. There's
wow.
a resolution. You got teachers to, like, act
I did,
in it.
Yeah,
like,
see.
How long is it?
I had support. Oh, how long? What if 10 minutes?
Good, that's a good short. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about a little kid. And then at the time, right?
It's better than some of the shorts I see of these films.
I went and I just, on a lark, I tapped some, I went back to my old high school and then I asked the drama teacher, like, hey, I'm making a little short film. Can I ask some of your
you
students
know, reaching
to be
out
in
to
it?
Your connections,
yeah,
your resources.
And then,
yeah.
And I got some really nice, talented kids, you know, so it was cool, man.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's tracks so much that as a younger person, you know, you're into like movies and comic books and all these other things. And, you know, at face value, it's like, yeah, you're into dorky things, right? You're into like all these cool things. But when you start putting all the pieces together and you start seeing that a lot of this is related to the art of like telling cinematic stories, you know, it really just like adds up together. To me, in a way, that kind of instills this movie making like third eye in you, right? Like really helping you develop it at such a young age that you could be trained, you could go to school to learn it, you can spend the rest of your life doing it. But the way you went about it is like you're like the same as like those Kevin Smiths, those Robert Rodriguez, the same folks who, you know, were a big fan and like are a big consumer of it, that it helps guide your vision as you start
as a young person and you have limited means, you want to just see some piece of it, like yeah. some piece of what you like, you know what I mean, and you'll like if you did one move or one shot that you liked that you feel like has just a little bit of your heroes, what your heroes do, like if you look like you look up to those Kevin Smiths and those Rod Rodriguez, right? And then like I mean the whole the idea of just doing it yourself and the gumption of doing it, that's not uncommon. But, like, I just was pure going off of just I want to see it. I just want to see something. Like, I don't care if it's made of clay or it's made of wood or, you know what I mean, or paper.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was half-inch VHS with a rocket launcher, right? And so I just figured, like, okay, well, let me just make something, you know? And so when I was at PCC at the time, and then I was in this little filmmaking class. That was the assignment. But everyone else turned in these kind of really small things, but like, no, I wanted locations, and I wanted to be ambitious, because we could do it.
You,
like
you did more than what was required, yeah.
Because I wanted to do a, you know, my own little cute little silly movie.
You put yourself into it, yeah. So, I think Mariana might know this, but I don't think anybody really knows this, that in high school, I made my own movie, too. Yeah.
Gotta see it.
It was, good luck. I've been trying to find it, too. It was basically when I was at Roosevelt. One of the classes I took was video production, because I was in 8-track. And, it, you know, the class is straight up. the teacher, that's where I saw El Mariachi, Citizen Kane, mm-hmm, Sunset mm-hmm. Boulevard.
Yeah.
Yeah, the teacher, McCluskey, he was a screenwriter. Like, one of the first days of class, he's like, yeah, I'm a screenwriter. I wrote the straight to DVD sequel, Casper Meets Wendy.
Oh, right on.
I was like, I never saw that movie, bro. But you know, they're the teacher. They're teaching you all the basics, mm-hmm. you know, writing, mm-hmm. Plot structure, you know, first, second, third act, all the stuff that goes behind the scenes into like getting your basic foundation of movie making.
Right.
And the class project was to develop, and mind you, this they have like six different classes, right? So they have six different class projects for somebody to direct, to shoot, mm-hmm. and to edit. So
this is high school?
This is high school.
Okay.
Yeah, so for me, my motivation was like to not get picked as an actor. So I wrote something that I knew would get picked as like, this is for like first period classes, the project we're going to do. And my idea was, you know, given the restraints of like, we only have like the class time, mm-hmm. maybe like something on weekends. Yeah, we're limited to locations, especially being at school.
Right.
So I wrote a script about the student who was ditching. He decides to go get a soda from the vending machine. Mm-hmm. And then the school security chases him around the school.
Love it.
All Looney Tunes, Scooby-Doo style. And at the end, you know, before they realize that, oh, yeah, I was like, now I'm really thirsty because I've been being chased by the security guard. They go to the vending machine. And right before they take their sip of the soda, the uh-huh. security guard gets them and they are denied their cold, refreshing drink.
Oh, sad ending.
But, I remember the teacher telling me, it's like a lot of the skits I was incorporating is just things I've seen in Looney Tunes.
Right.
You know, like the one thing that I wish I could have done was the door gag chasing scene, like in Scooby-Doo, where they're like, it's a hallway, there's a couple of doors, and they're just
they
like,
go in this one door, they come out back one door, and forth. He comes out of that door, he comes into this door, he comes out of that door. Love that gag. That's a great gag.
That's a classic.
Yeah, so I you know, mine got picked, I directed it, I edited it. I was like, man, this is cool. I really wish I had a copy of it, but the teacher's not there anymore.
That's what I'm saying. Like, can I say what this reminds me of, this the idea that, like, the notion of how, like, the art form has its conventions. Yeah. It has its, like, okay, beginning, middle, and end, three act, et cetera, right? But what is what cannot be copied is your creative spirit.
Vice versa, sir. Vice versa.
Like, the thing that you want, like, you wanted to be loony, the choices. Like, okay, I want things, the security guard versus the ditching kid. I want it to be Looney Tunes.
Funny.
The tone.
You know,
like,
realistic.
All these things.
Yeah.
All those things are, like, what makes it just unique. No one can copy it.
I will say this. There was one scene where I had a student dress up. Well, where the student being chased, like, grab somebody's, like, clothes and then, like, draw a mustache on their finger. As the security guard is passing by and he asks him, hey, did you see a kid coming back here? Yeah, he went that
way. Dude, that is hysterical. Oh, my God. You have to. Is this on, like, a
I don't
tape?
Know where it is.
Is
we,
it on
we
tape
shot it,
or DVD?
We shot it in digital.
Uh-huh.
So it will most likely be digital or on DVD. I was in high school in 2002. So.
Right on. Oh, my God.
So we were using that.
That sounds. How long was it?
It's like 10 minutes, like
that's
maybe
hysterical.
Less. Yeah.
That's hysterical.
Mr. McCluskey, if you have a copy of this and you're listening, please send it.
I'll just look them up in IMDb and like, hey, remember me? I was in your class in 2002, first period. I need my class project.
No, that's so great. And it's those kind of like old, it's neat to see old work. You cringe a little bit,
yeah,
you know, because
yeah.
you're vain. As an artist, we're all vain, right? But if you look back, it's neat to see how you used to think. That's the shit
so
I used to think was funny.
Unfiltered, yeah. so unrestricted from the lessons now that you take as rules or like guiding principles to how to do something. Yeah.
Yeah, man, totally.
So for you, Mariana, being in the magnet school, what, and again, you mentioned is like this pressure of like, you're going to go on to do big things
save
and have
the
responsibility. Yeah, what... Was it for you between finishing up high school, deciding where to go to school, and where did you end up going?
So that was rough because I was undocumented. And so everybody was like, And so everybody was like, you have to get really good grades, otherwise you're not going to get scholarships, you're not going to get grants. And I was like, I don't qualify for any of these. Like, get off my back, woman. And they're like, no, you can totally do it. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm undocumented. And I didn't have that word for it. Like, I know in Spanish we say sin papeles. So I was like, I don't have papers.
Sans papiers.
Like, yeah. And they're like, what do you mean you don't have papers? They're like,
it's such a foreign concept, right? To them. Yeah.
And I was like, I just don't. And that's been an interesting reaction I've had to me as a person throughout my life, is when I tell people that I was born in Mexico, that I immigrated here as a little kid. They're like, I've had someone straight up say, like, you're not undocumented. I'm like, yeah, I am. And they're like, no, you're not.
Because you don't have an accent. You're not wearing a sombrero. Like, you speak,
and I've had this happen a lot. Like, you speak so well. So, yeah. I have my locked and loaded reactions now as I'm a little bit older. But when you're younger, it's hard. And so for the particular program I went to, they progressively each year of high school add more and more AP classes that you're required to take.
Yeah, and sometimes double dipping and already like checking off boxes for when you go to school.
Exactly. So by the time I got to college, I'd already finished a little over a year of general education. Hell yeah. And I was like, I have to do this because I can't afford 4 years of college, right? And so picking a college was literally, I wanted to go to UC Santa Cruz. Realistically, I could not go. I did get in, but I couldn't take it because I couldn't afford to move up there. So I went to Cal State Long Beach because I wanted to get far enough away from my parents where, like, I could just have some breathing room. Because living in a house with three younger siblings and two parents, there's always a TV on.
Yeah.
And, like, my whole family is extremely social, so there's always people at the house.
There's somebody always, like, vacuuming somehow.
Someone vacuuming at all times. Oh, gosh. So I wanted to get away from the house a little bit. Studied human development because I was like, I'm going to be a psychologist, I'm going to be a doctor, because there's all that pressure of, like, you have to be a doctor. Minored in French because that's what I really wanted to do. I ended up dropping out, and now I work in the legal field, which is whatever. That's just where I am. But
yeah, congratulations on becoming a certified paralegal.
Thank you. It's technically certificated.
Certificated.
I know. They really drill that into your head.
All right. Like, don't get it twisted. Certified. Yeah.
I know. But yeah, so that, have that. It was difficult because the administrators in the program just could not get it around their heads that I didn't want to take that many AP classes because I didn't want the stress because I wasn't going to get scholarships anyway. So can I just not be completely sleep deprived throughout all of high school? Because that was a big problem. There's a lot of sleep deprivation with a lot of the students because there's just so much work to do.
Man, I'm so glad I was lazy.
Yeah. No, like, I got, there were days I would have like 3 hours of sleep a night. Because on top of just the program being difficult, I didn't have a lot of the vocabulary that the kids in my class had when I arrived. Like, there's a lot of grammatical rules I basically had to learn, like, my first semester of ninth grade with Dr. Barnett. They're like, just nobody, they always existed, but none of my other teachers cared to, like, enforce them.
It's like Oxford comma bullshit like that?
Stuff like using, like, there's that phrase, like, oh, She would have gone to the store, but for, you know, something happening. And I was just like, I literally had to diagram sentences. I'm like, I don't fucking know what but for means. I was like looking up in the dictionary, what does but mean? What does for mean? How do I put these two together? Because, like, my parents were like, I'm sorry, we stopped that multiplication, you guys.
Yeah.
So that was a interesting.
It's funny. A running theme on this show, having amazing guests who excelled at school, and me always saying, "Yeah, I did enough work not to get fired."
I just wasn't good at school.
School didn't give me. Similarly to Mariana, I was in the opposite end, but in the same situation, I was just like, I'm undocumented. There's nothing's gonna accomplished here. I'm just gonna, like, coast through and do bim and get my degree, and then figure it out.
Right.
And here I am having a podcast. Yeah. But for you, when was it gradual? Did you have an epiphany moment with a movie or an event like Kenny for your passion to do filmmaking?
We actually had a lot of film projects in high school because a lot of the kids in this program are children of film producers.
Oh, wow.
One girl would not shut up about how, like, we used to live next to Brad and Angelina. Not okay. Angelina, Brad and Jennifer. This is Jennifer. And so she'd be like, yeah, like, we live next to Brad and Jennifer. Like, my dad mows the lawn.
Yeah, like they're filming out there all the time.
I know. I'm like, what the heck? And then we're like, oh, yeah, I take trapeze class with Giselle. You know the Victoria's Secret model? She's not that pretty in person. I'm like, nobody cares.
I've heard similar to say about Aubrey Plaza.
Literally, we were talking about, like, in, like, U.S. politics class or whatever the fuck it was. Like, she literally stood up and was like, my dad is in the Skull and Bone Society because he got in from, like, Harvard. Okay. And we're like, why are you bragging about
Isn't that
this?
A movie? With no, what's his face from Cruel Intentions?
No, but it's a, what do you call it? It's a,
She's like, no, it's real. My dad's in the Skull and
it's
Bones.
It's a conspiracy like, theory.
Though. Look, I got the ring.
Yeah. Right?
It's like Illuminati stuff.
So at a certain point, it's like, are you for real? And now, I'm not going to say what she does now, but anyway.
Is she on TV?
But it was, what was the question? I just started ranting.
When?
Filmmaking.
So was it an event or like gradual?
I like doing the film projects with the classmates. So whenever there's a film project option, I'd be like, let's do it. And I would like think of like, we had to edit in camera because nobody had editing
at the time. Dang, so, that's a lot of rewinding.
So, right, you watch it on the camera, you're like, shit.
Or you'd be super clutch.
It, right?
Just be clutch as fuck.
So I would actually, like, a lot of the kids would just, like, set up the camera and just one shot, one scene, and it just acted out like a play. Mm. And I was like, this is boring as fuck. Can we have some coverage, please? I didn't know what the fuck it was called at the
time.
Like,
single angle, like, right. No movement.
But I'd say, no, we have to stop the camera, and now we have to shoot it from here. And just get a picture of her face and her reaction. Okay, now stop the camera. We shoot this side so we see what it is that's blowing up over here.
Putting a puzzle together, yeah.
Putting the puzzle together. I didn't have the language for it, but I would actually say, like, no, okay, well, what do we want to do? Well, she has to burst into flames.
I'm sorry. Did y'all even storyboard at all?
Right? I'm ashamed to say no.
Hey, that's how I do my work.
I remember for one project, a girl had to burst into flame. So we literally had a classmate fall onto a bed, and then someone else had sparklers, and they held it in front of the camera.
That's one way.
So it was like in-camera compositing.
Nice. That's some very Be Kind Rewind vibe.
Yeah, they call it sweeting now.
We call it sweeting. But yeah, I remember when we screened it in class, the sparkler, everybody burst into laughter because it was just so funny. And I really liked that feeling. I was like, oh, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, you got like, your action from folks.
I was like, I like this. So I like comedy. And when we were working on Agony, coming up with like jokes, I love talking shit. I love coming up with jokes. And I knew that, like, the concept, because it's verite film of, like, hitmen, people being shot, like, it was kind of scary if we didn't edit it right, if we didn't put the jokes in correctly. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I would always fight to make it sillier and sillier and sillier. I was like, no, sillier. It's got to be sillier. We gotta.
Well, yeah, the trick was to kind of, like, it's, okay, like it reminds me of that lesson they teach you in film school, which is, like, okay, if a guy walks out and gets hit by a bus, that's tragedy. But if a guy walks out, falls down 15 flights of stairs, then hits an ice cream truck and an elevator and da da da, and that's comedy. Like, so we're trying to like push it, like, so it doesn't get too scary, because that's a scary idea. Like, when you shoot Hitman verite style, it looks like a fucking snuff film. So how do you make it funny?
It's good.
So you have to make it funny. So you make it funny, but you push it. You just keep pushing it. So you shoot him.
I will say, perfect example of this is when you do the barbershop knock. One of the scenes where like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the shave and the haircut.
It's like somebody in the scene, not to like give too much away, but in the scene, somebody's getting shot and the gunshots, you know, basically do that rhythm.
Yeah. So... And honestly, it was a fun, I wanted to, with every endeavor, you always try to plant a flag and be like, okay, make something I haven't seen before. What's something I've never seen
before?
That's
great motivation, yeah.
And like, that's intellectual. That has nothing to do with money, you know. What's something I've never seen before? And so that's why this approach, because I, you know, we don't have a lot of money. We have the cameras that we have, the lenses that we have.
You have to sweet up a lot of things.
Well, not so much sweet, but just more like, as a writer, justify why it looks like that.
Yeah.
Because as a filmmaker, like I'm vain. All my other projects, trying to make them look slick and cool and trying to, you know, figure out what type of look you're going for. But this is so, I don't have no control over locations. I mean, not no, but like just limited control on lights or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's very run and gun, guerrilla, verite style.
DIY for life.
So I had to kind of justify that. Like it's part of the look, like make it a look, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So there's, so because it looks so real, the jokes had to be absurd. The people had to be absurd.
Definitely over the top.
Situations had to be absurd. Yeah. Just, and Mariana was really good at that, like helping me, like encouraging me to just push it, make it sillier, more Looney Tunes. No. And that's the thing too, trying to come up with jokes that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Like, what's a joke we haven't seen before? So, yeah.
I mean, and y'all have definitely tried to push the boundaries with original stuff, but you definitely also lean on the classics.
For real, too. Yeah. Like, sometimes, like, you know what made me feel good? Because there's a time, like, there's a killing that happens, and I'm like, okay, how can I make this funny? And the only thing I felt was good was just make it a fart joke. But then I thought to myself, like, isn't that kind of crass? Is this bad? Is this bad taste? And then I thought to myself, well, if it's good enough for Mel Brooks, you know,
it's true.
That's my lane, is dick and fart jokes.
So when you saw it and you're like, I love fart jokes, I'm a sucker for fart jokes, I'm like, okay, yay, I'm justified. I met my people. There's an audience.
Very lowbrow audience over here.
Yes. You know.
So with Mariana, you having some experience in school, Kenny, you went to school for it. I want to learn a little bit more about what you did, Mariana, with in the 2010s with the Immediate Justice program. What was that like? And then your experience with it too.
Yes. So Immediate Justice, I got into that through a friend of mine, Audrey, that I met from college. And so Audrey was working with Tani Ikeda on establishing a new nonprofit program teaching young queer teenagers sex ed through filmmaking. And like basically encouraging them to use their own voice to create sex ed programs for other teenagers through film. So they wanted and were looking for volunteers that were experienced with like film production or at least interested in it to like help establish a program, create workshops, create like you know, just materials and doing all of that. So it was the first year of Immediate Justice. We did pixelation animations, which is also called stop motion animations.
All right.
And the kids, you know, wrote their own scripts. They designed the shots. They made their own props. And then we had a premiere at the Japanese American National Museum with a red carpet and a stop and step and repeat. And it was great. The kids were really so cool. Happy. Really cool. And I still get random emails from like friends going, oh, I just saw that animation you worked on years ago. It screened at a festival here. Like, it's still screening at random places. And these kids, we still keep in touch with, like, on Facebook. They, like, follow us now. Because now they're, like, adults and, like, graduated from college. So they add us on Facebook. And I'm really proud of them. Because, like, one, I know one started the Chulita Vinyl Club and does that.
Nice.
Went to school for illustration. Another one is an indigenous rights activist who worked really hard on saving the San Marcos foothills. And that got funded, and they saved the foothills, and they do art. And so a lot of the kids are still working in art. A lot of the kids still keep in touch with each other. The program kept going, went international. I know Tani.
No way.
Tani had the program in China. She did it also in India. So it was a great success. I'm so happy to help kids. And, like, we were always, when we were planning out the workshops and the program, the facilitators, we'd all sit together and be like, oh my gosh, we're so jealous. Like, we would have loved to have something like this when we were kids. Like, just someone say, whatever you want to do on film, we'll help. Just do it. And it's free. And I was just like, oh my gosh, where was this? Like, even like just 6 years ago.
I mean,
just
even the resources that you get, mentoring, that's a big one. Yeah. But like the more technical things that are hand on, like camera equipment, computer equipment, software. Yeah. All that stuff.
But just as an outsider watching and observing, one thing I thought was really, really cool, a thrill that I got, was watching these kids who never had a voice or even had a chance, and then they got to flourish, they got to try stuff, and it was neat to see them try and be like think of themselves as artists. Like, no, you're in control. You're the boss. You get to make the calls.
Yeah.
You get to talk about what you want to talk about.
And that was an interesting process as well. It's like asking them, like, well, what do you want? And they'd be like, I don't know what I want. And like helping them narrow it down. Like, okay, do you want it to be happy? Do you want it to be sad? Yeah, do you want it to be funny? And like just kind of helping
flush it out. Yeah.
Flush it out. And I see a lot of them kind of learn to articulate their feelings and thoughts a little bit more. I'm just happy. It was good. I'm so happy about it.
That's an awesome project. Yeah. I know here, especially as part of Espacio, Bull Heights Beat, similar idea, right? Mentoring youth. But instead of filmmaking, it's with journalism, you know, getting them to learn all about that. They produce their own podcast, too. Hopefully, you know, they're back at it soon enough. But, yeah, one thing I did want to talk to y'all about is, aside from learning about your experiences in terms of why, you know, you decided to become filmmakers, what are some of your influences in terms of directors, movies, like things you've seen, past projects for both of y'all?
Mariana?
I'm kind of a snob when it comes to visuals for a film, which is funny because our film is so grungy and
yeah, it's like a punk rock song.
It is like,
a punk
like
rock album.
We kept calling it our zine movie.
Yeah,
we're like it's a zine. Just,
makes
it's
that
a zine.
Perfect description for
it's
it.
A zine movie. It's a zine movie. Yeah. It's that's the aesthetic. But like when I watch a movie, I like things. They don't have to be like crazy fantastical, but just that someone gave a shit about the frame and the composition. Like. Who comes to mind? Gosh, what is
Heroes.
Her name? No, but you, Julie Taymor. I really like Julie Taymor.
We can say I hate her.
No,
I don't hate her.
I didn't say that. I just said I like Julie Taymor.
Go on.
What is something we've seen of them?
Julie Taymor did Titus. Did the Frida movie?
All right.
They do. They're a theater director mostly. I believe if I remember correctly, they directed the Lion King musical.
Oh, wow.
That kind of gives you a feeling for the colorful, vibrant sort of tableaus.
Yeah.
So it worked really well for Frida Kahlo's movie, for the Frida Kahlo, it's called Frida, for that movie because they evoke a lot of the paintings with tableaus in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that was a great interpretation of the work. Also, the guy... I forget his name now. The guy who did Be Kind, Rewind.
Oh, the French.
The Frenchman.
Yeah, I forget too.
I forget his name.
I'll remember
later. That's why we have smartphones.
Right? No, he did Eternal Sunshine, Be Kind, Rewind.
It's funny. We know the work, but we forget
the
name.
I know, but the work is what I'm talking about. Like, the visuals were fantastic. I remember I saw Eternal Sunshine, and I just kind of, like, lost my mind. It was great.
Michael Gondry?
Michelle Gondry.
Michelle.
Oh, yeah. Michelle, sorry.
Yeah, Michelle Gondry.
There's my French minor. That's it. That's all it led up to was this podcast.
Also, plug, if you've never seen Be Kind, Rewind, you are missing out.
It is really fun. And then I think the third one that I would think of would be Baz Luhrmann. Same thing.
A lot of whimsy. You like colorful and whimsy.
I do, because life is depressing enough. I want to watch something cool and different and like unrealistic on film.
Surreal.
I love surreal.
A lot of surrealistic imagery.
A lot of Del Toro for sure.
Yeah. Guillermo del Toro. He's a little dark for me. I like him.
Too darks, yeah.
I like him.
Kenny?
Yes.
Besides Cameron Crowe? Not Cameron Crowe.
Yes.
James Cameron.
Yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango. What was the question?
Influences.
In terms
of like
James
your favorite
Cameron for
movies,
sure.
Directors.
My gateway was Terminator. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for that movie, because that movie had a profound effect on me.
About the future and time travel?
You know, everything. Everything about it.
Every
trick in the book was used to make that film. The design, the universe building.
Set in L.A., one of my favorite L.A. movies.
The mythology, you know, the whole... I mean, that story is Mary and Joseph.
Cyberpunk, a lot of cyberpunk.
Just the whole... And then when that...
That's also like in the height of like 80s cyberpunk with Blade Runner
and
a couple of other movies.
When that robot emerges from the flames... I lost my mind.
That's practical effects.
This movie... No, it's not just practical. It's everything. It's stop motion. It draws upon such a rich history. So anyway, when I saw that movie, that changed my life. Like that, I found out that he designed the stuff. He drew the robot, and he designed it, and he wrote the story. I mean, that made me fall in love with the craft. that, wow, there's a job where that lets you do all that and like create a world and a universe. So who else some of our heroes? I like Tony Scott. I like Ridley Scott. Very visual, very, you know, sci-fi. And a lot of sci-fi. Because, you know, I think I was a depressed young man. I was angry. So a lot of the things I gravitate toward, Guillermo, of course, you know, Del Toro. I love the dark things, dark dystopic futures, robots. I'm a big thing on robots. I love robots, monsters. Like, if you look at my work, it's like, it's hard for me. It's a little embarrassing because, like, I can't get away from the fact that I just love beautiful women and monsters, like, and robots. Like, that's my thing.
We'll get to some past projects right now. Yeah.
So then I just, so influences, Tony Scott, Ridley Scott, Luc Besson.
Who directed The Professional.
Professional, yeah. And La Femme Nikita, The Fifth Element. So yeah, very, I'm high design and visual.
A lot of cult movies there.
Yeah. Sam Raimi, for sure.
Or after Spider-Man?
Both. All of it. Both. Drag Me to Hell is awesome. Like, I love, you know, this. I'm big on craftsmanship, whether it's big or small.
Oh, he's doing the new Doctor Strange movie too.
Is he?
Yeah,
that's great.
Badass. Yeah.
He'll be great. I thought his Oz movie was fantastic. A lot of people didn't like it.
I didn't even know it.
I thought it was great. I thought it was a fantastic movie.
It's not The Wiz, is it?
No, it's The Great and Powerful Oz. So it's kind of like a backstory.
Yeah, I'm like, whatever about Wizard of Oz stuff. So,
well, there you go. But I thought it was great. I thought it, like, to give that artist those set of paints to work with, and him doing his Sam Raimi thing, but on that kind of Frank Baum universe, was a wonderful comment. Same thing with Spider-Man. When I heard, who's doing Spider-Man? Because for years it was saying Cameron was going to do it. And then they said, Sam Raimi's doing it. It's like, that's a great
The guy who
too.
Did Darkman?
Yeah. Love Darkman. Yeah. See, I'm alone a lot of times. Like, I thought Darkman was dope. I'm looking at themes and shots and maybe stuff that other people aren't looking at. But I have a high respect and regard for craftsmanship and thoughtfulness to themes and story. So that's why my heroes are like Guillermo and especially people who write their own shit. Luc Besson writes his own shit.
Nice.
James Cameron, like the writer, Nolan, of course, like all the people who write and visualize, like visualists, visionaries who create universes. I'm so in awe and respect for those artists who can create these universes and like make them happen and have the technique. And then you can and kind of make it happen with their own intrinsic philosophies, and you can kind of see what they're into, like what they want to talk about. Like Ridley Scott, his movies are always about lost siblings, or
you can,
like,
see the themes,
or killing God.
Or James Cameron is always about, look how tough mom is, look how tough and cool mom is. Like, those are,
mom's awesome.
Mom is awesome. Yeah. You know,
what is for both of y'all? What is one movie you've seen recently where it's like wow? Like, that's a movie right there. That's why I do
I got
this.
One. Wait, how recent can I go?
I don't know.
Well,
it's up to you.
My first that came to mind was Blade Runner 2049.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's probably my favorite movie.
Fantastic
right now.
Film.
Ryan Gosling.
Of my whole life, because just obviously the vision, the visuals, the sound design is fantastic. The story is heartbreaking.
Heavy, yeah. Super heavy.
Like, I'm gonna cry now. Like, sometimes I think about the story and the love story, and I just start crying because I'm like, they just.
Oh, wow.
I can't. I'm gonna start crying here. But yeah, I love Blade Runner 2049. Everything about it.
And you saw like all the prequel stuff they did?
No.
Like, they made an anime where they told, like, they explained the explosion in the beginning of the movie where there was
some of the backstory.
Yeah.
I didn't know
there's
that.
Some little.
It was directed by the guy who did Cowboy Bebop.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, I know what I'm doing tonight.
Right? What about you, Kenny?
For me, dude, what came to mind was the Mad Max Fury Road.
Hell yeah.
When I saw that, I'm like, see, now that is something I need to study. I need to watch this shit.
Are you going to watch this with director's commentary?
Because when you say tick all the boxes, it's fascinating when you say that, because it's like, it's true. And when I say boxes, not just as a piece of art, but just the acting and the, just every, it's like, you wouldn't change a thing. There's no fat on it. It's so rich and creamy and just thought provoking. And you look at it and you think, at least I do, I'm like, wow, there's Kurosawa in there. You see all the DNA that goes into that movie. And then, you know, and Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron is just, oh my God. Like, it's so, it just, every time I see it, I see more stuff I can learn that I can, and I just enjoy it. I just think it's a fantastic, wow, the stuff they do in that, with any piece of art, what I like to ask myself is, did this artist do a good job indulging themselves? In other words, being fearless and kind of going off the deep end and going up their own ass. Like, how hard did they go up their own ass to kind of give me something unabashedly them? Okay? Yeah. You follow me there?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whether it be any Picasso, Frida, whatever. Like, because you know people are going to go, that's not what it's supposed to look like. That's not what a movie's supposed to be like. Whatever. And so it's an artist has to be alone in that. Like, you have the security to go, well, you know what? It's going to live and die on its own as its own piece, and I have no regrets. So even if you don't like it, then you go, okay, it's not for you then. But yeah. So you really hope art finds its audience. With that piece, oh my God, you have a guy with experience who knows the universe, who knows what he wants to do, and just shows you fantastic stuff. And to me, that show is a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
So I'm like kind of getting off track a little bit. Do you think that Mad Max is picking up where Mel Gibson's character left off? Well, or it's like somebody just took that name again and like they're carrying on that name? Well,
I actually watched some of the, like, I watched the Cannes Film Festival kind of press conference that they did, and people had that question. Like, where is this in the,
like, in the canon? Excuse me, where is Canon Uckley? Where is this taking place?
And he kind of just said, Mad Max was never supposed to be
a universe, a series. It's not an like Marvel Universe movie.
Yeah, well, they're not. I think what the director said was, he's like, it's not supposed to necessarily connect. It's just an episode. It's just an episode in this character, which I thought was an interesting answer. So, like, to answer your question, I guess it's just I don't know. I don't look at it as okay, dude. Here's how I look at it. It's like Batman, you know? You have all these fools playing Batman, all these different
Batmans. That's an easy answer. It's so, like, multiverse.
Yeah, well, no.
It's not Max multiverse.
It's not serial. In other words, it's like, you know how like different actors can play Hamlet? Here's this dude's version of Hamlet.
It's interchangeable.
And here's Hamlet with a chick. And here's Hamlet this way. And here's Hamlet upside down. Whatever. Like, so I feel it's our media now, you can't really you can't get all super nerdy about canon anymore. I mean, you could if you want to as a fun exercise, but in the end, the creative artist is the master of their art. And if they say it's part of it, it is. If it's not, it's not. And so homie said, it was never meant to be that way. So I just kind of make them. And I had a cool idea to make a cool Mad Max episode. So I had this dude playing it, and it's like, but where is, and then the press guy is like, but where is it in the timeline?
Is it really that little kid with the boomerang?
Yeah. Okay. But that's what's the fun thing about art, is that you can kind of make these fun little theories. It's
interpretation's up to you.
It's a but it's a relationship with the, I don't want to say the patron, but the people getting the art. Like, is it funny to you?
Yeah.
Or how do you look at it?
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, now, like, speaking right now, like the Fast and Furious movies. Yeah. It started out about family stealing cars.
Family.
And now we're going off into space.
Yeah. Yeah. Because why not?
And apparently John Cena and Vin Diesel are brothers.
Because you know why? Because if your Fast and Furious is part one, it's been done.
Yeah.
It doesn't mess up. If they go into outer space, or if they go into the journey to the center of the Earth, what fast...
I'm waiting for them to like go blow up an asteroid.
Or go to hell. Fast and Furious go to hell, and they meet Satan. My ride's bigger than your ride. Oh yeah, Satan.
Satan, I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Family. So, ride or die. My family's ride or die.
Sorry,
Satan.
Devil. Here's a boost of nitrous.
Right. So, it doesn't take away. Like if you're a fan of the first one or whatever one or whatever version. You can have it. It doesn't ruin it. This idea of purity is old.
Yeah.
Or juvenile, yeah. I should say. You shouldn't... It doesn't take anything away. Like, oh, now it's stupid. Like, no. It was... Either A, it was always stupid. Or B, just change your... Make your perception of it bigger. Go bigger on it.
Yeah. I feel the biggest thing that happens with that is Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Because now that, like, Disney took over, they're just, like, revamping it all over again.
For sure. It's... it's like I said, when it's when people fall in love with a certain like piece, and people re-visualize it or revamp it or reboot it, or what I hate, dude, is when they can't decide and make it both, and it's like this weird sequel. I hate that. Like, either be a sequel or either be a reboot, but don't be both and do this weird mishmash, because then it's nothing.
So you're not a fan of the Sandra Bullock Ocean's movie?
No, actually, I enjoyed it. Really good. Really? Yeah.
Is Rihanna being a hacker?
That was fun. All right. I had fun.
I think it's on HBO right now. I think it was fun watching.
No, you know what it is, dude? Because it was fun to watch Sandra Bullock and Cate Blanchett together in a heist movie, and they get Aquafina, and I thought it was a, I had a blast. I had a blast.
All right.
I thought that was fun.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't, I think sometimes we, you get, art has to, in the end, it just has to, like, make you feel happy or have fun. Like, you're supposed to have fun. Art's supposed to be fun.
Yeah. I feel like, I feel like you can tell when a production team and, like, is scared of what the nerds are going to say online. Like, they're trying so hard to, shoehorn it into, like, no, it's canon, but it's a multiverse, but it's a this. And when you start putting all those things on, it's like, dude, just make the fucking movie.
Yeah. Why here was fucked up, too? Even when you give the nerds what they want, they don't like it anyway. They still don't like it.
Yeah. So that's off-putting to me, where I can tell, like, please like it. Please don't be mad at me. Please don't Twitter
us. And that's what, like, I'm talking about. I like it when I see something uncompromised.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I mean when I say, when the artist went up their own ass, it's like it was uncompromised. Whether it's so funny if it's, it can be so cheap that it's uncompromised. So when you look at earlier works, you see what's, Sam Raimi wanted to do that shit. He wanted to hang his brother in a fat suit dangling and spinning around going as funny so whatever. That's what he wanted to do. And now he, and then you get big, and I guess then you can do that. But in the middle,
I forgot he directed the Hercules TV show too.
Yeah, you get bullied when you're in the middle. But when you're Nolan and they don't fuck with you, or when you're like Nolan gets, I mean, he's kind of always gotten what he wanted. But I get the feeling like when he was small and did like Following, he's in control. He's in control of the intellectually. I mean, like the events, the story. He's in control, but. That's what I mean. I love, I have mad respect when I see someone uncompromised and maybe even use technique and shortcuts and so-called tricks to be able to get their vision or get their story across.
Nice. Well, so speaking of art, I wanted to touch on two projects y'all have done in the past. The first one being The Dark Kill. Like, explain, like, describe it to folks. Describe it to
the
folks.
The Dark Kill was a kind of... short film piece where I wanted to exercise some suspense muscles. So, you know, something I, again, this is new to me, you know, trying to make a suspense thriller. So it's kind of like a crime thriller, but a spin on it. And what, for me, the attraction to that project was, hey, what happens if two gangsters who have a beef that are trying to kill each other in the dark and can't see each other, but only see each other when the gun goes off?
Yeah, the flash muscle.
And that's it. That when the muzzle flash goes off, that's their one little split second clue of where the other dude is. That and maybe the bad guy talking shit. So I thought, to me, that was a cool little suspenseful, you know. And ironically, it's so cinematic, but it's just, it's black for a lot of it.
Yeah.
Right? But to me, that was the draw, was to do this cool, you know, thing where when the muzzle flash went off and I freeze time. And I have the camera kind of like have a God perspective, go around the room and I show you who sees who wears who, like what the, you know.
As the audience, we get to see. Yeah.
And to me, that was a very irresistible. You always go for some irresistible little kind of thing that you want to see as a, because, you know, once you get going on a project to finish it, it takes a lot of work and sweat equity and cajoling people and their schedules and this.
Yeah.
And
the production of it all. Yeah.
So for me, it was an irresistible thing to do, a suspense crime thriller where you get to kind of have that cool coverage of going around the room when I freeze time, kind of like a mannequin challenge, right?
Mm.
But, you know, and you know, and have twists and turns in the story. So
it won some awards, right?
That one, no.
No? I think I got nominated.
It got nominated. That, you know, it's funny too, you mentioned it. You just do your thing and see which ones won an award. And it's funny you bring up the one that didn't win any awards.
Not but yet, it got nominated. Is. It got well, nominated.
Well, you know what's funny? Someone was interested in distributing it, though.
Oh, shit.
So yeah. I'll take that award over, like, you know, a trophy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You can find it in, like, the B section at the video store. So the other one was White Wolf Zombie Killer.
Yes, sir.
Explain that one to folks. Describe it.
So...
I like
describe
just,
it. Okay.
Yeah, like just from like the cover alone, I already know it's like
I never did a zombie movie
some Blade
before.
Vibes to it.
Yeah, you know
yeah,
what? Okay,
that's funny.
No, yes. It's no you. It's funny. That's a very astute observation. Blade. That's a really good, you know, because Blade is a
Wesley
a,
Snipes Blade.
Yeah, because Blade is a vampire, but he's a vampire killer, and he's a like a vampire himself, right? And so I was looking. I was really taken by the idea of creating a hero zombie. That just, for some reason, I couldn't let that go. And it got good to me. And then what happened was, as I kept exploring this idea, I was like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if this zombie, like, this zombie was, the zombie hero was protecting, like, the last human baby. And then suddenly, it all snowballed after that. And before I knew it, you know, I had, you know, I had actors, I had makeup, and I tried to like try to get people to be in on this project, and like and then I you know I was drawing upon you know the masters. Yo, Jimbo is like there's a kind of lone wolf and cub kind of thing
yeah,
going on
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I call him the White Wolf, but it's to me it was just fun to explore that kind of identity crisis zombie hero samurai warrior in the wasteland. So.
Yeah, and I really liked it because, yes, there's zombies and swords and action and all that cool shit, but at the heart of it, it is a very human, relatable story. And when we screened it at... it premiered at Shriekfest, right?
Yep.
So it premiered at Shriekfest, and there was a palpable, like, kind of, like... When the... What would you call it? The fulcrum? The ending?
Mm-hmm.
The, like, really emotional end of the... film comes up like we actually heard people in the audience going wow like, oh and it's funny because Shriekfest is so it's an awesome horror festival
it
has
is.
All kinds of horror it's got like gore which I hate
yeah
got
you got
slasher,
like the genres of
they got the genres they got the comedy horror so ours was almost like a little bit of a dramatic horror
yeah I was really into you know because yeah it's an action movie but what for me what's really was fun to explore was just the dramatic tension of does this dude eat the baby like does you know what I mean
yeah.
And there was a very real chance that the hero eats the thing he was protecting and that was the real struggle
yeah.
to me
mm-hmm.
not him fighting off these zombies and being all cool with his sword
fighting
and guns
himself
and, yeah.
it's himself that, see that's what really
yeah.
I thought oh and you can give an actor to play that and you know that's the
yeah.
fun stuff
yeah Jason
you know?
Frost, who played the White Wolf, was fantastic because he has no lines. It's
yeah.
completely
yeah, yeah, that's right.
Just physical acting,
expressions,
and we gave him goggles so we hide his eyes because we're just dicks like that. But yeah, no, he did such a good job.
Yeah, like, it's great. Yeah, you know, like one of my favorite is that. Yeah, it's actually one of my favorite directing moments is because you know you're shooting, and I had a wonderful moment. Where he's kind of holding the baby, and I was, you know, you're directing off, you know, you're saying the inner thoughts to the actor, and the actor is
mm-hmm.
playing
mm-hmm.
the inner thoughts, you know, that you're saying. He's like, oh, what does this mean, and et cetera. Like, and then the way he's playing it, it's just a wonder. And then when I saw the final results in the editing room, I was like, this is the best for me. Just this is the best experience, the best. So far, I should say, but the best experience of me as far as being a filmmaker, where we're all in collusion, we're all in sync. And,
nice.
You know, the actor, he's totally giving me, like, he's doing better. Like, he's not only is he playing what I want him to play, he's putting a spin on it that is, like, so, so delicious. So, you know, I'm in the editing room and, like, oh my God, I got to hang on this longer. How long can I hang on this? You know, that kind of situation. Right? So, yeah, that was really. It was like a touching moment. Like I really enjoyed that.
I really
like
that
movie. Nice.
Yeah.
That one did win awards.
That one did win awards. Can I say that?
So with I mean with like the projects y'all have, the new one that just came out, What is one way somebody listening could support independent filmmakers? Like, what can we do?
Go out to festivals, watch. Okay. Watch movies. Yeah. Don't watch the big studio movies. You know, sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not. But when you watch, when you go to festivals, you're watching people with heart and soul really try to express something. And some of them are not great, but some of them, so I've seen some gems.
Yeah.
You know, like when we go to festivals, you get to see all the other people.
Yeah, you get to see plethora.
There's many times I walk up to the filmmaker, like, dude, your film was so good. And then you're like, oh, they're polite, like, oh, yours is good too. But, and you kind of bro out like that, or sis out, right. Or sib out. Yeah. And so to answer your question, I think, yeah, man, just to go out and maybe, go see some independent, go to a film festival.
There's lots of film festivals. They cater to genres like, Agony's in the LA Comedy Film Fest right now, so that's all comedy.
Yeah.
Another way to support independent filmmakers is to just follow them on social media, mm-hmm. retweet and yeah. share stuff.
Trailers, and you'll see stuff projects. You will never be able to see. Like, it's a lot of it's kind of, I guess you could say, in a sense, unrated, right? Like, it's not vetted by a corporation or nothing. So you're seeing a pure vision of somebody.
Yeah, like, passion projects.
Yeah, they might not, like in Agony, we're doing stuff like, wow, can we get away with this? But I thought to myself, well, when do I get to do it except now?
Yeah.
Let me get what I want. Let me push the envelope and let me have the most absurd thing I can see. Let me just conjure it and see if an audience thinks it's funny too. I think it's funny, so.
Putting it out there.
Yeah. And so you'll see some gems. If you make the effort, you could see some stuff you'd never see on TV or online.
Yeah.
You'll see something special.
And you get to meet the filmmakers.
And you might.
Yeah. But yeah, also just social media, because unfortunately that is something that film festivals look at, because they want to sell tickets, and one of the ways that they'll be assured that they'll get the tickets is like, oh wow, these guys have so many followers online, so if you screen their film,
yeah, it's a new world.
We'll
man.
Get people to come in.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Exactly. So just like retweeting, following, doing all that, and then because film takes so long to do, it's not like they're going to be constantly spamming your feed.
Well, I remember too. Like, I'll see it online sometimes. Like, I put up my first short film, Falsehood, which is about Red Riding, the big bad wolf being put on trial for what he did to Red Riding Hood, and it's just kind of trial movie, the surrealistic kind of drama that I did in Art Center when I was in school. And when I put it online, I'm like, oh my god, I've been looking for this. And so you kind of find out that there's a, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that how...
There's an audience out there.
There's an audience out there that may be looking for this kind of stuff. So it's wonderful that we're now in a world if it's not necessarily on TV, or if it's not necessarily on...
Way more accessible.
Now you're like... Because I remember people were going, oh, I saw this once on PBS, because it was showcased on their little...
Yeah.
PBS had a show called Fine Cut, and it was showcasing the best in student films and... And so... Yeah, it was nice to hear that people were looking for it,
I will say, some my favorite subgenre of all of this is seeing a lot of youth who grew up, in the previous generation to me. The generation after me, because they're younger. them doing, keeping that spirit alive of independent filmmaking, but theirs is very niche. They're out here making, original... spin-off movies or shorts based on anime characters and things like that. I think so. This is ridiculous. One of the ones that is my all-time favorite is these dudes just put together. If you've seen anime, you're familiar with the anime intro with the song and a bunch of imagery and a lot of stuff moving back and forth. So they basically made a short where it's a person selling drugs set to the pace and theme and music of an anime intro.
Love it.
That's amazing.
But
that's what I'm talking about. These kind of, you never see it.
I never know I wanted this.
Yeah. Oh my God. So true. I never know I wanted this. Exactly.
Isn't that a great feeling? It's like, I'm so happy it's here.
But that kid took a risk. See?
Oh, my God.
It's like, as an artist, you're like, oh, but is anyone going to like this? Is anyone think is this going to be good?
Is anybody going to like vibe with this?
So like, that's the thing. Like, as a filmmaker, you're kind of like a chooser, like a tastemaker. Like you're kind of collecting things that you find interesting, right? And so when I put Agony together, a big risk was like, is anyone going to... I think this is funny.
Yeah.
Is anyone else going to think this
I think
this
that
is,
doubt and hesitation is real, yeah.
Because it's dark. It's really dark. And, you know, it might be too much chile for some people. And that's fine. But that's why, like, when we got into some festivals, it was such a wonderful feeling because people get it. They get the joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke, y'all. Yeah. Like, don't take it so seriously. It's a joke. So...
So it made it into its best comedic feature at the LA Film Festival 2021. Mm-hmm. It's the official selection of the LA Comedy Festival 2021, and it got an honorable mention at the LA Underground Film Forum.
We were just really excited to just watch it with an audience because, dude, you make these films, right? But it's quiet. You don't know if that joke landed or not.
Yeah.
So when you see it with an audience. Oh, it's going to be amazing just to see, because it's like the actors, they've been working on this for years. They had to play a character for 8 years on and off, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a hell of an ask.
And
it took a long time because, people either fall out of touch or et cetera. And you have
life
to
happens.
It.
Yeah.
And then you got to edit it in a way to, you know, and I'm putting my name on it. It's a Kenneth Louie film.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to have a certain, box being ticked, as you say, boxes being ticked. So it took a long time. So it's nice to finally. I'm just so excited to watch it with an audience and see people laugh at the work
that
everyone
did.
Because
like when we screened White Wolf, like it's quiet. There isn't really like.
There'll be laughs.
Yeah, you don't laugh at an action
but
drama movie.
Comedy is clear right away. Like, oh, okay, good. It's landing. It's working. People are kind of following it.
You got that joke. I wasn't sure about that, but it stuck.
Yeah.
So where would folks be able to see Artist in Agony?
Well, right now, because of pandemic, right, they're trying to figure it out. Like, festivals are in limbo now because people can't gather indoors.
Yeah.
So... right now, it's kind of up in the air. We're still waiting to hear word, but we're really excited because one festival usually screens at the Grove, and that'd be nice. So we just want a good screening. Like, as long as it's a good sound and a nice screen, nice size screen,
mm-hmm.
and a packed house. But see, how do you pack a house nowadays? So that's
that's
the whole kind of. Issue right now.
Post. Yeah.
But we'll definitely post about it on social media.
Yeah, as soon as we know,
we're gonna
shout it from the rooftops.
Yeah.
Like the torches of gun.
So with Artists in Agony in the books, in festivals, with the pending like screening date, is there any future projects y'all are already like setting your sights on? Like already like in the back burner?
Wow. Mariana's always coming up with stuff too. And I'm kinda working on a couple of scripts. So, I'm actually,
All right. So there's things in the works.
There's things in the works. Yeah. I mean, always. You always have to have something, kind of cooking and brewing.
That's what's fucked up about finishing projects is you always think you can finish another one. So it's like, oh, hey, I just got another idea. And then you just kind of, we just kind of shout ideas at each other across the house. And then occasionally if one
you're in the shower, hey, what about this?
Right? It's like, get out.
No, it's true. It's true. What if it was a luchador with a mariachi and they're in outer space? And
yes.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah. No, so we start to notice which ones stick and, which ideas get good, which ones you actually hang on to. So Kenny's got, a couple scripts that he's working on because he's the writer. I will add little lines here and there, suggest things.
But she's a good sounding board. You know what I mean? Like, she'll...
Yeah.
What I find, the way our working relationship... It she can't go from it's more difficult for her to go from zero, right? So but if I conjure and I start something a little bit, then she looks at it and goes, oh, you know what it needs? That little bit. And I'm like, oh my God, why didn't I see that before?
Yeah.
You know, so she
that's a great collaborative process.
I can kinda start it, but she can kinda help finish it, so to speak.
Nice.
She's really good at, like, because once she got, once we were going on Agony and she kind of get an idea, she, then she would add all these little jokes in there and, like, what if this twist? What if this joke? What if that? What if this character was actually this, doing this with that character? And you're like, holy smokes, that's brilliant. Let's make that shit happen.
Well, you know, as you both of y'all mentioned, if you don't see something being made, you manifest it yourself, you make it yourself. And both of y'all know that, like, my, like, out there project would be a movie with zombies and cholos.
Dude, I would do it.
Write
that's,
it.
That's the thing, right? You got to, yeah, write it.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Yeah.
It's one and thing to have an idea.
That's tough. Like, I got a lot of ideas, but I, it's because, honestly, dude, because of it's been a tough year for me personally.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just emotionally, I lost my mom last year. And it's been a rough year, and because it's the crisis and all that, I've been very much cherish my friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. my chosen fam. I'm more precious with them,
yeah.
And just trying to get along, and just kind of keep my head together, and because there's not to get too personal, but like there's always like a river of crying inside of me all the time.
Isn't there a river in all of us?
And then like all it takes is the right. Thing, if I see a song or hear a music,
man, too. That's me watching Adventure Time the other
dude,
day.
Dude, I was watching Inception the other day, and I started crying like crazy. So it's you know. So anyway, what were we talking about? So just
zombie cholos.
Oh, it's been hard to kind of get emotional peace necessary for me to start writing and get jazzed about a script because just. Emotionally, it's been chaotic lately. So, you know, to write, I have to kind of be in a, I know it's to be in like a good mood.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a little bathroom break here. All right. So back from the bathroom break, to close it up, where you mentioned social media. So where can folks find y'all?
Well, okay. There's a Mental Pictures Facebook, which is.
Mental Pictures, and you'll know from the butterfly logo, it's like a Rorschach test. It looks like a butterfly.
Nice. I did have that question.
But it's a film, but it's supposed to be also like a film frame.
All right.
Like an actual film with the perforations.
So I was going to ask, like, what was the intention behind the name and the design?
Mental Pictures, I've always, that was a banner name that I wanted to just have all the productions have a name under, and it, for me, every time I endeavor into a film and invest, go all through the things to invest myself in, and just create a film, I have to have some mental like picture of a frame I want to make happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like something in that project. Like I remember with Falsehood, like which is about the Red Riding Hood and the wolf being put on trial. I remember thinking vividly just, oh man, I just would love to see the wolf in a pinstripe suit. Next to his attorney.
Like a pachuco.
Yeah, and just that vision, that visual, just possessed me. So, mental pictures. Like, when I have a mental picture from the show, that makes me want to make the movie. And so, yeah. They're mental pictures.
So, find you on Facebook by just looking for Mental Pictures.
And there's also...
Instagram is mentals.pictures.productions. Mm-hmm. And then where else?
And you can see the website for Artisan Agony... at artisanagony.com.
Yep.
And then, you can also see my some of my other work on kennethlui.com.
Uh-huh.
That's L-U-I. So
I have it in the description.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So kennethlui.com.
And where can folks find y'all?
I'm on Instagram, on arroz con leche. The con has a zero. It's not an O. And then Kenneth is a crazy maker on Instagram as well.
A lot of cat pictures lately.
Yeah, yes. we recently became cat parents. So that's what
you're
happens.
Looking for that cat content.
No, I didn't think I'd become a cat photographer, but here I am now.
I didn't think a lot of things, but here I am either. So, but yeah, so that wraps it up. Thank y'all for coming through. Woo, recording out of Espacio has been fun. So yeah, a lot of this stuff will be in the episode description, the links where to find them. And yeah, support your local independent filmmakers, your living artists. While give them their roses while they're here, right? So, yeah. So thanks everybody for listening. This has been Orale Bojai. So we'll catch you on the next one.
Woo. Orale.